Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Big Ten writer for Sports Illustrated, avid Atlanta Braves fan. And just, I'm going to start up, Dustin, with full disclosure to our listeners. Most of them know we pre-record the show. What they don't know is this week we're recording on Monday, okay? Well ahead of when people will be listening to this. It is Monday afternoon. Dustin's Braves are playing a doubleheader against my New York Mets. We are about 7 innings into the first game. It's still 3-0, Dustin, as I see you checking your video.
Yep, still 3-0. Still a gem of a game by Spencer Schwellenbacher. Schwellenbach.
So it's Dustin cannot wipe the smile off his face, and I am miserable, Jim, today.
You know what? I apologize. I didn't even realize when I had to bump scheduling for our recording time, I did not realize it was in the middle of the game. So I apologize. If we would have done this earlier, we both would have still had some hope and optimism. And now only one of us does.
Dustin, I don't want to hear it. I don't want your apologies. I don't want your sympathy. You got that grin on your face from ear to ear. Like everyone knows what that smirk looks. Your buddy has the smile who says, yep. Oh, he feels bad for you. You know, he just stole your girlfriend or something to that effect. And he says how sorry he is. Meantime, he's smiling ear to ear. That is the look Dustin has on his face right now. And I am not happy about it.
Yeah, it's going to turn into a one-man show pretty quick, I have a feeling. Just going to exit out of the Keystone Kickoff Show. Just Jim today. We don't know what happened to Dustin.
And like I said, you're going to have to stay on the air because I'm going to be miserable. So it's got to be, Joe, just turn into Dustin's Keystone Kickoff Show because Jim won't be able to keep going. All right, let's get off the baseball. Let's get to football. At least as a Penn Stater, Dustin, much better news this week than for my New York Mets. A nice win over an undefeated and ranked Illinois team with, trust me, Dustin, there was a lot of whiteout energy at Beaver Stadium on Saturday night.
Yeah, it was an incredible atmosphere. And I know the whiteout game isn't until Washington later this season, but that was an environment that is, you know, to me, I still want to get there, even if it's not for a whiteout game. I've been told, obviously, it's one of the best atmospheres in college football. It looks amazing on television, but that was a thoroughly impressive performance from Penn State on both sides of the football. I think when you look at the final score and see 21-7, you might have some questions about whether Penn State is a college football playoff contender or top of the Big Ten contender, but this is a really good Illinois football team. And what I think was most impressive when you look past the final score was how Penn State dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. That was a really strong performance. They had some miscues in that first half offensively. But overall, just a really impressive performance. I think Abdul Carter is still chasing down Luke Altmaier somewhere in the backfield.
Well, it was interesting. Some of the surprises for this game was Penn State fans. You just hear Illinois and Coach Brett Bielema, and you're thinking they're going to try to run the ball down your throat. They had zero success running the ball. Just okay, there were a couple runs, but overall, the Penn State defense completely shut down the running game. And actually, some credit to Luke Altmaier, who showed something early on. And for Penn State, it was kind of deja vu all over again with the first drive by Illinois. It was like we were watching Bowling Green and Connor Bazelak again.
Yeah, that's what, and I think even Todd Blackledge made that comment, you know, that Bowling Green had some success and they scored on that, if I remember correctly, scored on that opening possession, didn't score again the rest of the game. That was a really well-scripted drive. I think Barry Lunny Jr. is a really good offensive coordinator, but after that, Penn State completely dominated the game, shut them down. And I think most people will understand this and probably acknowledge it, that stop at the end of the first half, even to not allow Illinois to get a field goal, to miss that field goal and to go into the break tied at 7-7, that was an absolutely huge moment in that game. And I think that kind of shifted momentum, because it wasn't like Illinois was dominating. But I think going into that game, if you would have said 7-7 or 10-7 at the half, Illinois is going to take that running away on the road. So to get that big stop at the end of the first half, that was impressive. I think an underrated aspect of this was, we talked about how in that Bowling Green game, Penn State struggled to tackle. And we wondered how it might look against a team that's really experienced, has really an Illinois team that has some good wide receivers and a quarterback in Luke Altmaier that has kind of picked apart the other four teams on their schedule this season. But maybe Tom Allen going up to the top of the press box might have made a difference in that game. The defense just looked, or maybe it was just the fact that they were locked in. I don't know. Whatever change they made, they need to stick with that. And I know that they changed the he wasn't calling the plays because his voice is too raspy and he's hard to understand. So maybe that made a significant difference. I don't know exactly what it was, or if Penn State was just completely locked in for that game. But I think that was their best defensive performance we've seen thus far.
Well, I think what happened, Dusty, in that second half, watching the game and seeing the scoreboard, 7-7, then 14-7 for quite a while, you only a one-score lead for quite a while, you didn't realize the domination of Penn State over Illinois in the second half. Just real quick for you, third quarter statistics, Penn State, third quarter, had the ball for 21 plays, Illinois had it for 5. And in those 5 plays, they managed a total of 11 yards. So that's pretty dominant. And on both sides of the ball, because Illinois barely had the ball. They had a 3-and-out, and then their next possession, they ran 2 plays and the quarter ended.
Do you remember, as if this was eons ago, this was last year, but what came to mind watching the second half of that game was 2023 Michigan, in the sense that they may not do anything offensively that's going to overwhelm you or thoroughly impress you. They had some playmakers, don't get me wrong, but what they did was they just controlled the ball. They didn't make mistakes. They didn't beat themselves. And I think that's what you saw. Penn State didn't want to get too carried away. They didn't want to do anything too fancy. They didn't want to risk losing that game. And so they just couldn't, like, it was 21-7 Illinois. And like you said, it was 14-7 for a long time. Illinois had chances to win that game, to tie that game, but it just also never really felt like Penn State was going to relinquish that lead once they got it. So I think that was maybe the most impressive part. Again, I think you look at 21-7 on the final score and you're like, oh boy, is this really the Penn State team we thought we were going to get in this season? I think it is. I think it's better than the team we thought we were going to get this season. It's just they played the ball control game in the second half, and it worked amazingly.
Well, also, some more numbers to support what you're saying, Dustin. In this game, Penn State ran the ball 44 times and only threw the ball 21 times, which seems to become a theme. Oftentimes, I think when you bring in an offensive coordinator who has the kind of reputation Andy Kotelnicki does, you assume it's about throwing the ball, you know, scheming wide receivers open, that type of thing, where I believe Kotelnicki will do what's effective. And I think James Franklin, he referenced this, he did this a year ago, you know, whispered in the Mike Yurcich's ear, if we're running the ball well, keep running it. And I think that was the case here, because you had just a combination of Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, 34 carries, 197 yards. Tough to top that.
Yeah, and that's, I think James Franklin said after the game, I don't think there's a better 1-2 punch in the country than what we've got in our backfield. And I think that's, I don't know if they're the best 1-2 punch, but they're up there. They're one of the best combinations that you can have. And I think also to your point, I think it was strategy, because when you look at what Illinois has done defensively, the strength of that defense is their secondary. And additionally, this was a team, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I think this is correct, they had had 7 interceptions in their first 4 games. That's how they have created their turnovers. And you don't want to give them a chance to get back in the game. So, of course, you need to run it 40 sometimes in that game to win. You don't want to give Illinois any sense of a chance. You don't want a chance to get a pick 6. You don't want to give them any opportunities with the ball in scoring position. And so that's why I think, hey, we've got our 14-7 lead. Let's grind it out. Let's try to get another score on the board. But more importantly, we trust our defense. We're not going to give up a big play to this Illinois offense. And that's why, I think that they ground and pound against a team that was opportunistic in the secondary, and you escape with a 14-point win.
After watching the start of this game, Dustin, you understand why Penn State kept running the ball also, because they were doing it so effectively. Yeah. But also, in watching this game, you wondered why Illinois kept trying to run the ball, because they couldn't do it.
Yeah, and I think it was probably a little bit of the Spider-Man meme, like, right, pointing at each other in the mirror, because I don't think Illinois probably on that same front, let's not make a major mistake to take ourselves out of this game. Let's try to keep we're going to hope that somebody busts a big play. We're going to try to catch him off guard. But yeah, it was a little bit surprising when they did eventually have to throw. Was the pick 6 there? Near
almost
the end of the
pick
game.
Six.
So almost pick 6. Yeah. I'll qualify it as a pick 6, but to me, that was probably their strategy as well. I don't know. This was old school smash mouth Big Ten football. And the bottom line is Penn State's offensive and defensive lines are just that much better than Illinois'. And I think Illinois is pretty good.
Well, that's encouraging to hear for Penn State people. And just, I know you can't play this game well other than this, but Illinois' leading rusher, Fagan, he had a run of 34 yards, a big run. Other than that, he had a total of 64 yards otherwise, which means 12 carries for 30 yards other than the one big run, which means he was being shut down completely. So it was tough going on the ground. Line of scrimmage, as you pointed out, both sides, Penn State dominated.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's much else to say from that one other than, I mean, that's exactly the type of performance you want to see against a 4-0 Illinois team that I think they're still better than what people give them credit for. They're still in the top 25 this week. That was a really good performance from Penn State.
Very good, Dustin. That was Penn State versus Illinois. We're going to look at the rest of the Big Ten with Dustin when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am New York Mets fan Jim Galante. He is Atlanta Braves fan and Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. As I mentioned in our first segment, we're recording this as the Mets and Braves are going at it in the first game of a doubleheader. Each team needs to win a game to get into the playoffs. Now, Dustin has his eye on a monitor watching the game. It was 3-0 when we started the first segment. His Braves were ahead. My Mets are now coming back. By the time you all listen to our program, that game will be long over, but we are in the middle of it. Mets are making a comeback. Last I checked, it was 3-2. What's going on, Dustin? Anything good for the Mets?
Base hit. It's tied 3-3 with a man on first and third.
Woo! All right. As long as those good updates keep coming, I'll be happy, Dustin. If it goes the other way, I don't want to hear it. All right. We talked Penn State, Illinois in our first quarter. Now it's time to look at the rest of the Big Ten. Dustin, who cares? The Mets are on. No, I'm only kidding. Let's talk about the week in the Big Ten. And this is where it starts to get interesting with the new members that are in the conference. Those West Coast teams playing, and it started Friday night, Rutgers-Washington. Actually an interesting game going into it, Dustin. And the Scarlet Knights, they come away with a win, 21-18. But the numbers didn't go their way. If you look at the stats, the only one that counted, though, was the scoreboard.
I was just going to say, if you just looked at the box score on this game, you would have thought Washington ran away with it. They had, what, over 500 yards of offense compared to Rutgers 300. And the bottom line was, this was a bend don't break defense. And when Rutgers when Washington got into the red zone, I'm sorry, Jim, that your Mets just took the lead here 4-3. So I'm very upset now as I'm trying to talk. When Washington got into scoring position, Rutgers buckled down and Washington missed three field goals. They were just 1 of 4 on their field goal attempts. That was the big difference in the game. They couldn't punch it in. They are one of the worst red zone teams. I think this season they've made 18 trips. They've scored 9 touchdowns and I think 13 total scores. So they have been able to move the ball between the 20s. And then they run into a brick wall those final 20 yards. And that's how Rutgers was able to escape with that win, because their offense did not do much against a really good Washington. And I shouldn't say really good, undervalued, underrated Washington defense.
Well, and again, I've been following Rutgers a little bit more closely. I think I've mentioned on this show, I have a good friend who's a Rutgers guy, and I like to see his team win. I also like Greg Schiano. The way he coaches tough, hard-nosed football. We talked about Illinois, Brett Bielema, but Rutgers plays that way. And I think for them to be competitive in the Big Ten, that's the way they can do it. And it feels like Greg Schiano is getting there with this team.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I have said, though, Jim, and I still hold true to this. Now, they are on a good path. They are 4-0. You look at their schedule. Outside of maybe, and I don't even think this is out of the question, outside of that USC game, I don't know that there's a game that you go into and you think they can't win. I think they could win. They're not going to, but I think they have a chance to beat all of the opponents on their schedule, except for maybe USC. But I don't think that one's out of reach. This is a team that if you want to make a difference, a 2-run home run, I'm devastated. I can't get through this. It's 6-3. In favor of the Mets. But to go back to the Rutgers comment, this is a team that has to win 8 or 9 games. Jim cannot stop celebrating by doing the Y from the YMCA with that 2-run shot and blasting the Braves into oblivion. But this is a Rutgers team that has to get to 8 or 9 wins this season. If you want to grow the program, you have the schedule, you have the talent, you have the running back, you have the coach. You have to get to 8 or 9 wins if you want to be competitive at the top of the league, especially with now that you don't have divisions.
And, you know, Dustin, I'm sorry. I'm so distracted by that. listeners of our show, I think, have heard me talk about my college roommate, who's still a very good friend of mine. And obviously, besides following Penn State, we're both hardcore New York Met fans. He just sent me a text message as we're speaking. All I had was 3 letters, OMG. So if you were to follow the Mets, you know how important that is. But we're talking about Rutgers of Washington. And Rutgers, we've talked about this a lot. Rutgers always had Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan on their schedule playing in the Big Ten East. They now play none of those three, nor do they play Oregon. So what arguably are the 4 best teams in the conference, they don't play any of them. So it does give them an opportunity in, you know, every game they play. So, yes, this is a year they better win at least 8 or 9 games. But there's no game on their schedule that's unwinnable. USC probably being the toughest game, especially since they play that one on the road. Now let's get to just want to hit a couple other games. USC, we mentioned, they beat Wisconsin 38-21. Wisconsin was up 21-10 at halftime. They had their chance here, Dustin. What happened to them?
They also don't have an offense. I mean, Wisconsin is flabbergasting to me, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised. Maybe I just put too much hype in Luke Fickell. I don't want to say turning it around, because Wisconsin's been a really good program for a long time, but I thought, and I think a lot of people believe, that Wisconsin was in a position where if you hire a guy like Luke Fickell, they will catapult into the top of the Big Ten to compete with Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Oregon, and not at all the case. This is a, like, Wisconsin may be the worst. This may be the worst Wisconsin team I've ever watched.
Wow.
Like, I mean, Barry Alvarez was the head coach for most of when I was growing up. Then you transition to Brett Bielema. Then Gary Anderson had some success for two seasons. Paul Christ was really good. I don't know. This is going to be an interesting team to follow, because it is, I will say that they, it is kind of hit or miss, right? Their two losses are to a ranked USC and a ranked Alabama. Their two wins are over Western Michigan and South Dakota. So they really haven't played any of those middle of the road FBS or Big Ten teams just yet. But the way they've played in some of these high profile games, they have, they play Penn State, Iowa, and Oregon three straight weeks. That's looking pretty rough for them.
It will be interesting to see. And it, to me, it's always been fascinating. Luke Fickell and Matt Rhule coming into Wisconsin and Nebraska, I think both were so highly thought of. And the feeling was both Wisconsin and Nebraska have such great histories that it just took the right coach. And did they each make the right hire or not? But the feeling, I think, was it might take just a couple years, but at least by year two, we would be seeing so much of that improvement. We thought I still think Nebraska's on the right track, because they've got their quarterback. They got their franchise quarterback, and he'll be there for a couple years. So despite that loss to Illinois, I think Nebraska is on the right track. Wisconsin, not so sure. The other game I wanted to ask you about was Michigan-Minnesota. Michigan held on to win 27-24. They had a big lead. Minnesota makes a big comeback in the fourth quarter. Then Minnesota, onside kick. And I'll tell you what, Dustin, the Big Ten officials defended that onside kick so well.
You know what? It took me a second to understand what you were saying. But yes, I agree. And I'd have to go back and look. That was a questionable at best on offsides call against Minnesota. I also heard, and I did not look that closely, that the ball was touched before it reached 10 yards, so it wouldn't have counted anyway. I don't know that that was true either. I'm going to have, like I said, I haven't looked closely enough at it. But I mean, man, Michigan is a team that I thought got back on track in that win against USC. And for the most part, on Saturday, they look like that team we saw against USC, against Minnesota. But you can't play for three quarters in the Big Ten. You've got to play for a full 60 minutes. And they let their guard down. And I think it was Urban Meyer that said, shockingly, you know, dissing on Michigan, basically saying this isn't a team that can compete at the high level in the Big Ten if they can't throw the football. Well, I think they can, but they have got to be very consistent throughout the course of the, like, when you can't throw the ball and you can't put up a lot of points, there is very little margin for error. And I think that that's what you saw in that at the end of the third and fourth quarter, because I think Minnesota got that interception late in the third quarter and then ended up scoring a touchdown in the fourth quarter. So the last 18 minutes or so of that game was dominated by Minnesota. And you can't have stretches like that if you're Michigan in the Big Ten and want to be competitive with Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State.
Well, I think the one issue to think that last year's Michigan team was a run-only team is not fair to them. They had a quarterback who could throw the ball when necessary and timely. This year, I'm not sure that's the case. I go by what you said even before the season, that this is a Michigan team that could struggle. And I'll be honest with you also, I didn't notice if the ball was touched within that 10 yards, but the officials made it irrelevant anyway by making a bogus offsides call. Last game I want to bring up, you're Indiana Hoosiers. Oh, my God. Speaking of offenses, they're a juggernaut. Put up 42 against what I don't think is a very good Maryland team, but still, it's every game. Indiana is putting up a crazy number of points, Dustin.
Yeah, 42 points, and I think through the first quarter and a good – I think it was scoreless in the first quarter and like 14-7 at half, or maybe it was 14-14, but it was a low-scoring first half before we just had the floodgates opened. Kurt Cignetti, 5-0. And Indiana 5-0 for the first time in, I think it's 57 years. I think 1968 or 67, I think would put it at 57 years. This is an Indiana team that is a force to be reckoned with. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I think they're going to compete for a Big Ten championship, but this right now looks like a team, especially given their schedule until November, this could be a 9 or 10 win Indiana team.
You know what? Not to correct you, Dustin, but you called them the Indiana Hoosiers when they're actually the top 25 Indiana Hoosiers. That is it for quarter number two. Lots more to go with Dustin. Stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Big Ten writer for Sports Illustrated. We are talking about the Big Ten now overall in the conference. Let's talk about the teams. Before we get to your power rankings, let's talk about the teams that are in the top 25. A little bit of a shuffle. We've gone this far. We haven't mentioned Ohio State, ranked third in the country as they were last week, are this week. And they had ho-hum, 38-7 over Michigan State. They haven't been tested yet, but it's Ohio State. They're just going to keep rolling, Dustin.
Yeah, there aren't many teams that are going to be able to test Ohio State, but in 2 weeks, they travel to Autzen Stadium to play Oregon, and that should be a really fun game. Ohio State did what you expect Ohio State to do, and I wasn't too surprised by this outcome because this is a Michigan State team that I've described as boom or bust, and it's really hard to be a team that relies on solely on explosive plays in these kinds of games. So not really anything surprising in this one. Ohio State took control early and then just kind of went on cruise control the rest of the way. I think their defense was really good, gave Michigan State's offense a lot of problems in that game too.
And we have Oregon at ranked sixth, Penn State seventh. They're teams that will move up or down a little bit just by attrition. Ole Miss lost, dropped out of the top 10. Just as an aside, Georgia lost to Alabama in an instant classic of a game.
Yeah.
What a tremendous game. And they only dropped to fifth, Georgia, in losing that game to Alabama. Alabama, I think, properly jumped to number one because with that win, they have absolutely the best win of anybody in the country. So they should be rewarded for the win just as much as teams get punished for the loss. Georgia dropping to number five. Is that the right ranking for them?
Yeah, I think they're still a top five team. I could understand dropping them a little bit further based on that first half for really most of the game. I mean, to get into that kind of hole, but then at the same time to be able to dig out of it. And this is also a team that's still clobbered Clemson in the opener. This is a team that had a narrow encounter with Kentucky, but they still got a win. I think that's a Kentucky team that just beat Ole Miss. So Kentucky might be better than we expected. I'm not too upset with it. I think top five is still a good spot for them. They've got a lot of tests left on the schedule. So if you're not happy with it, they're either gonna fall or they're gonna climb, because they've got a tough schedule the rest of the way out too. So I'm fine with them being a top five team, because like you said, instant classic game. That was fun in the second half.
It really was, and I was able to keep like one eye on that game in the press box while it's going on. Penn State finished before that game did, so I'm leaving, and in the parking lot, literally somebody just said, "Hey, Georgia's coming back. Georgia's getting ahead." You know, it's just people are bringing up the conversation in State College, PA, about a Southeast Conference game. That's how special it was. A little bit further down the rankings, Michigan and USC are 10th and 11th. And interesting, they're near the top of one-loss teams, except for Georgia, of course.
Yeah.
Are they ranked properly? Of course, Michigan has to be ahead of USC since they beat them. But are they where they're supposed to be at 10 and 11?
Yeah, I think this is more of the preseason ranking coming in. I mean, it's hard to knock Michigan because their only loss was to a really good Texas team. And then USC has that win over LSU. And then if you want to count the win over Wisconsin as a good win, I don't think it is, but I think some people probably will look at the paper and say, "Oh, it's Wisconsin. That's a good win for them." I don't know. I feel like they're probably more in like that 17 to 18 range, but that's just me. I'm not going to gripe over 10 or 11. I mean, they each have a good win. They each have a reputable loss. So 10 and 11 is not too bad for me, but I'd probably personally have them a little bit lower in the top 25.
Well, the thing about USC, which is interesting, is they don't have Oregon or Ohio State on their schedule. So their big game, and I understand they have Notre Dame later, but their big game will be Penn State. So that will be a huge, huge game for both those teams. That's coming up in a few weeks. Then can't forget it, Dustin, towards the bottom of the top 25, Indiana is now ranked. They are 23rd, and Illinois, interesting, even after the loss to Penn State, they stay in the top 25. They're number 24.
Yeah, I think that's the right call. I mean, I think Indiana, again, they finally beat, I think Maryland is a rebuild team. I think they're probably about a 500 football team. So for them to get a win, I think was in those conditions, that was a good win for them. I just still don't know how much we know about Indiana. Like from a top of the conference standpoint, I think they're in like a tier with USC and Michigan. I think they're in that conversation, but they also haven't played an elite team yet. I don't even know that they played a good team yet, Jim. And then Illinois, I think it's fair to drop them. They were 19 on Saturday heading into that game against Penn State. So they were competitive. They gave Penn State a huge run for their money in a night game in Beaver Stadium. No problem with them still being ranked, especially with their 4-1 record and wins over Kansas and Nebraska.
Okay. Now let's look at your Big Ten power rankings. And at the top, Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, and Michigan. I don't think any changes there, correct?
Nope, no change at all.
Then after that, well, first of all, you had your article out where you give your power rankings and you describe why a team is where they are. I like how in the Michigan rankings you mentioned their fortuitous offside penalty.
I mean, there's no other way to put it. If Minnesota recovers that, who knows? They had so much momentum in that game. Minnesota could have at least forced overtime. I don't know that they would have, but they would have given that. They would have had a shot. So, as you said, the officials did a good job of securing that onside kick for Michigan.
They did what they're paid to do. All right, they did their job. USC is fifth. They're up one spot. Illinois dropped a couple, but USC, Indiana, Illinois, Nebraska, Iowa. It's almost like you could lump those teams together, maybe even throw in Rutgers in that group. and it's hard to differentiate among them at this point.
Yeah, because I think that with those teams, I mean, they all suffer, not they've all suffered a loss, but either they've haven't been tested like Indiana. I think Rutgers has been tested, but Washington's maybe not the biggest. Iowa lost a heartbreaker to Iowa State. Illinois has lost to Penn State. Nebraska lost to Illinois. So I think those are all very good football teams, and I think you're right. I think you could lump them all together.
And then we could kind of do the same. After Rutgers, it's Michigan State, Washington, Wisconsin, Maryland, Minnesota, Northwestern, UCLA, and Purdue. Where do you draw that next line among that group? Because Purdue, UCLA, Northwestern, I think, are the dregs of the conference.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I would almost, Jim, put Michigan State and Washington in their own category. Maybe you could throw Minnesota in there, because Minnesota's losses are to Iowa, North Carolina, and Michigan. Minnesota's always such a wild card to me, but I think what I would do is I would go Michigan State and Washington are kind of in the same tier, Wisconsin, Maryland, Minnesota, and then Northwestern, UCLA, and Purdue are the clearly to me right now the three worst teams in the conference.
Yeah, they are. It's and just a news note, Purdue let go of their offensive coordinator.
Yep, they've terminated Graham Harrell after four games. Every offensive statistic was putrid, and they really had no option. To me, that was Ryan Walters getting a third season as the head coach at Purdue, as opposed to not. I think that was the move. They are one of their offensive analysts, Jason Simmons, who was just 2 years ago a high school head football coach, is now going to run the offense. So that's a big risk, but at the same time, Jim, I don't think it could get any worse than what we've seen the last 3 weeks.
Sometimes there are situations that are so bad that someone has to be the sacrificial lamb. Somebody has to go, almost just to show that as a head coach, you're not going to let things keep going the way they are. Heads have to roll to show everybody else, don't get comfortable.
Yeah, and I think he was the easy escape, because if you watch, I think in games against Oregon State, Notre Dame, they were a combined 3 of 21 on third downs. They passed for 56 yards against Oregon State. They had just 50 rushing yards against Nebraska. At one point in the fourth quarter of that Purdue-Nebraska game, Jim, Purdue had 165 penalty yards and 145 offensive yards. So that's not how you win a lot of football games. So I think that was an easy decision. They haven't looked good all season long offensively. There was really nothing else to do. And like I said, I think that was Ryan Walters basically like, I'm willing to do something midseason to save my job and get me a third year, even if Purdue goes, they could go 1-11. Maybe they're 2-10. Maybe they get a win over Northwestern, but 1-11 looks like it's collision course right now.
Interesting to see. All right. You're doing your power rankings now after, what is this, 5 weeks or so. What surprises you now? What didn't you see coming?
I think maybe one of the bigger surprises, and this is just maybe on one side of the football, I think Iowa's offense is a lot better than I had anticipated, and I think a lot of that credit goes to Caleb Johnson. It kind of reminds me of, and maybe I've made this reference before, when Kenneth Walker was the running back at Michigan State. I think he made their offensive line and their offense look a lot better than it actually was. I think that's what Caleb Johnson is doing. So I think that makes Iowa a really tough out. Indiana, obviously very surprising to be 5-0. I questioned not Kurt Cignetti as the coach, but when you transfer a bunch of guys from James Madison, Big Ten football is a lot different than Group of Five football, so I wondered how that would translate. Clearly, that's going over well. They are one win away from bowl eligibility, and we're not even to Halloween yet, and that is newfound territory in Bloomington. Let me tell you, usually by this time of year, they are looking forward to basketball season. And then not to go with the homer side here, but I fell into the trap that is when you cover one team a little bit closer than the rest of the teams, you tend to believe what the coaches and the players are telling you and what your eyes are seeing. And I thought Purdue was going to be a lot better. I thought that they made some roster improvements. I thought the coaching staff having that extra year of continuity would be beneficial, but they're god awful right now. So I think I'm not even necessarily surprised they're 1-3. It's just the way they are 1-3 that is so eye popping.
All right. That is it for quarter number three. Come back for quarter number four. We're going to take a look ahead at the Big Ten schedule.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m., and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm the Mets fan. He's the Braves fan. If you didn't hear us earlier, we're recording this show on Monday while our baseball teams are competing against each other. And it's been a roller coaster ride. And I no longer want to talk about it, Dustin. let's move on. Let's get back to football. So we're going to look ahead to this week's schedule in the Big Ten. But before we get there, I just want to talk a little bit the national picture. We talked about it just briefly, the Georgia-Alabama game. Huge win for Alabama. And here was the argument before the season against the 12-team playoff. You have this monster game between Alabama and Georgia. In a 4-team playoff, it's conceivable that this game could determine who makes the playoffs. It could have been a do-or-die game. Now, there's a very good argument that both teams would still make the playoffs no matter what the result of this game was. My argument is, I don't care. This is still a huge game. Both teams wanted it just as badly, played just as hard. It was still an instant classic of a game. The fact that later on, we may actually see these two teams play against each other again, whether it's the Southeast Conference Championship game or somewhere down the line in the playoffs. My argument is that's not a bad thing, Dustin.
No, I don't think so either. And to me, this was a huge game. I think everybody looks at it from the elimination standpoint, which I look at it as now the winner, now Alabama at some point down the road, a loss doesn't kill them. Whereas for Georgia, look at who they've got left. They play Texas. They play Ole Miss. They play Tennessee. If you drop another one, now you leave it up to the committee. Now they still could get in, but there's very little room for margin now, right? And Alabama's now got this great win. If they drop a game, they've got a tough schedule as well. If they fall, they've got a little bit of grace. So you're always, even though it may not be an elimination game, you're still always playing for something. And additionally, I would add the people that say that this isn't, you know, this eliminates one of the teams or whatever the case, like both teams are going to get in. This could have happened in the 4-team playoff. If Georgia's only loss with their schedule was to Alabama, I can guarantee you both teams would be getting in. I mean, I guess unless they played in the SEC championship game and Alabama won again, then they might keep Georgia out. But the fact of the matter is we've seen two SEC teams make it. We've seen two Big Ten teams make it. Sometimes that just is how it plays out. So I'm not mad about it. These kids, if it's a big time game, these kids are amped up, ready to go. And we saw it doesn't change the product at all.
No, and it doesn't change the interest as a fan with no rooting interest either way. The game was still as interesting and still I felt like must-see TV. And the fact is, because Georgia isn't eliminated or nearly eliminated by this loss, it makes the rest of their schedule more interesting. You know, all those games that you mentioned coming up are going to be still very interesting for Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, all those games, you can't, maybe you can afford to lose one. I don't know. But now it puts the pressure on them. Now they almost have to win out. Or like I said, you're going to put your fate in the hands of the committee. So, and what about Ole Miss just losing to Kentucky? I mean, now they're on the brink. This was a team that I think we all thought was going to get into the playoff. This is a team that plays LSU, Oklahoma, Georgia. There's just all kinds of intrigue. And this is what I think, more teams involved later and longer into the season, creating more important matchups. I'm fine that it doesn't eliminate a team from the playoff contention when you lose a game. I love it. I love that there's still all these teams fighting for something so late into November.
And you mentioned Ole Miss is a good example. It's a terrible loss for them against Kentucky. And with as a Southeast Conference schedule to play, you know, they're going to have big matchups, but they are not eliminated. They right. are not eliminated with this loss. So the rest of their season becomes more interesting, not less interesting because of that loss. All right. As promised, we're going to take a look at the Big Ten upcoming schedule. Couple interesting games now that they are playing among themselves. Rutgers, Nebraska. It's at Nebraska. Nebraska is a 7-point favorite in this one. This, to me, this is an interesting matchup. I don't want to call this an elimination game, but this is the kind of game that tells you, okay, which of these two teams is legitimate? Not that they're going to win the Big Ten or be a playoff team, but the highest aspirations for these two teams this year, this is a huge game for them.
Yeah, and I would say, in my opinion, I think this is probably bigger for Nebraska because they already have that loss to Illinois. And I think that Rutgers' schedule, now Nebraska's schedule by no stretch is a gauntlet, but if they were to lose to Nebraska, then you look at that game against Indiana the following week in Bloomington, that becomes a little bit tougher. They play Ohio State, they go on the road to play USC, and then they end the season with Iowa. So I know there were a lot of thoughts about this team could win 8 or 9 games. If you don't beat Rutgers, I think that puts that in jeopardy a little bit. Whereas Rutgers, if they lose this game, they still have Wisconsin, UCLA, Minnesota, Maryland, Michigan State. Maybe you don't beat USC and maybe you don't beat Illinois, but I think you still feel pretty good about getting to 8 wins if you're not able to get this one against Nebraska. So I think this is two teams that are really good defensively, two teams that kind of sputter offensively, but have their moments. I think this is going to be a really sneaky good game. And speaking of sneaky good games, the Mets just retook the lead 8-7 in the top of the ninth. 2-run homer.
By who? Did you see?
You would have, I did not see who it was. Lindor. Lindor.
Okay. MVP. MVP. All right. Anyway, forget this Ohtani guy. It's all about Francisco Lindor. All right. A couple other games of interest. I got to get back on track here with football. Michigan at Washington. And did you see the spread on this game?
I think I did. Was it 1.5 in favor of Michigan?
No, I have Washington as a 2.5-point favorite.
Oh, okay.
That surprises me. I would think it surprises you, too, with your critique of Washington.
Yes.
Now it is at Washington.
It is Washington. So it sounds like they're getting the home, the home advantage there. It is a little surprising, but I won't be surprised if this to me, I think Washington's defense is sneaky good. This is going to come down to whether or not Washington can convert in the red zone. They haven't done it through 5 games this season, but if they can find a way to get through Michigan's defense, I think that their defense gives them a chance, especially if Michigan's offense is going to be that one-dimensional. And the fact that Michigan's got to fly cross-country, this is not going to be the initial like college football playoff national championship game rematch we thought we were getting at the end of last season. But this is still going to be a fun game, I think. I think it's going to be low-scoring, grinded-out type of football.
I didn't see the over-under on it. That would be interesting to see. Who do you like in the game?
I think Michigan, I just don't trust Washington's offense to score enough points in this game. I think it's going to be a defensive battle. And I think much like they did with USC a few weeks ago, I think Michigan's offense and their ability to run the football will eventually just run down Washington's defense.
Okay. We also have Iowa at Ohio State. I think it's critical to point out that it is in Columbus. Okay. I think at Kinnick, especially if it were a night game, that would be at least a much more interesting line. Ohio State is a 20.5 point favorite in this one. I think there was a time we would have thought no one could be a 20 point favorite over Iowa just with that defense. Yeah. How do you look at that game?
I kind of view this as a game where Iowa will probably keep it close for a half, and then Ohio State will just do Ohio State things. I think Iowa's defense is very good, but I think Ohio State's offense is just explosive. They're going to have the ability to win the speed matchups, and then their defense is going to be overwhelming. As good as, do you remember the Ohio State-Michigan State game in 2021 when Michigan State, I don't remember if they were undefeated or had one loss, but they were ranked in like the top 5 or 10 and then went in and got creamed 56-7 or whatever the final score.
Yes.
I think that could happen because I think Iowa's offense is good, is better than it was last year. I don't want to say good. Don't want to put that into existence. I think it's better than last year, but I think when they are so one-dimensional that Ohio State is just going to feast and they're going to get the ball in great field position and Ohio State's going to probably run away with this. I wouldn't be surprised if Iowa keeps it close for a half, but in the second half, Ohio State's going to pull away.
And boy, that freshman wide receiver for Ohio State, he's special, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's really good.
If you folks haven't seen him yet, just look at the highlights from this past week's game. And a couple one-handed catches were just phenomenal. Before we take the quick look at Penn State, UCLA, the one other game, USC is at Minnesota. Minnesota, 9.5-point underdog. Could they keep it competitive with USC?
I think their game against Michigan proved that they probably can keep it competitive, but USC can throw the football, and I don't know how well Minnesota is going to be able to defend it. So maybe they can keep it close. I don't know. Minnesota, they've reached a desperation point of the season. Like, they're 2-3. They need a win, so they will have a little bit of sense of urgency. And at the same time, USC at 3-1, they can't afford another loss. So I think that Minnesota gets the benefit of being at home, but I think they'll keep it competitive, but I also don't think it's going to be one of those games where you ever really think Minnesota has a chance to win it.
And finally, UCLA is at Penn State. Penn State, a 4-touchdown favorite. This doesn't have a chance to be competitive, does it, Dusty?
I don't think so. I mean, again, this could be one of those games where Penn State kind of comes out of the gate flat. And for whatever reason, UCLA is able to take advantage of some things. And maybe it's like a 14-3 or 14-10 halftime score or something like that. And then Penn State puts its foot to the gas in the second half. Just because you had a highly emotional game last week, this isn't going to be the best opponent. And we saw how they played against in that Bowling Green game, right? When you maybe don't give your opponent that much respect. But otherwise, I think that this is just going to be Penn State, what they've done all season, and that's dominating the trenches.
All right, that is going to have to be it, Dustin. We'll see how that goes. Thank you for everything on the Big Ten. Thank you for your baseball updates, too. Folks, you're ahead of us. You know the end results. We don't yet. Hopefully, I'll get good news when we're finished. Make sure you tune in next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.